Blog Talk Radio.
Shalom, shalom, everyone. This is Yaina Yisrael, and we have our weekly edition of Members of a Better World. I'm going to get a song on for you while we wait on our host to come on the line, and I hope you like it. Here we go. All right, I see where I have my the host of the show on the line, Prince Asiel. Are you there?
Absolutely, Princess. How are you today?
I'm wonderful, sir. How are you?
Extraordinary, just like you. I'm always inspired when I get with the Yehuda Nation and we at Better World International for All Humanity is talking about the redemption of our people. I'm proud today also to have as part of our guest today, Professor Kananya from Israel, who is CEO of Better World International in Israel, and is the one that is internationally driving the development of the project that we're working on, so that he and Yediel and Ishayu are working on Better World Israel, so that as we expand the responsibilities are going to be that divided up. Also, I'm hoping that we'll have a call in from Kohen Naviel, who is set up also and Amitai in Israel to talk about the documentation of the 40-plus years in Israel, form of a museum, to begin to gather the artifacts that will stipulate and identify the historical journey that we've been on in the land since we landed in 1968, back after 2,000 years of being in exile throughout the world. So you should be able to identify the Yaina, an area code 972-58-421-204 in Israel, and we're talking about later on a doctor who is doing great things in America and in Israel, Dr. Clark and his wife, so that we can begin to show the expansive nature of the outreach of the Yehuda Nation and those who are seeking to have an alternative for our people on the righteousness of the God of Israel. And then, naturally, my co-host with me is Prince El Ram, based in Washington, D.C., and I'm asking him to introduce Professor Kananya from Israel. Nasi El Ram.
Yes, sir.
I just want to check right quick and see if Professor Kananya, are you on the line?
We have area code 258 that someone has pushed one. Let me open that up and see. Area code 258. Go ahead, you're on the line, 258.
Shalom.
Shalom, yes, that's the professor calling from Israel. Prince El Ram, make the proper introduction for the professor. And, Professor, introduce yourself to the listening audience for Better World, for New Humanity International, as well as the Yehuda Nation, jointly working on informing our people about the return of God's people and the end gathering. First, Prince El Ram.
Yes, sir. Well, first of all, I'd like to say greetings and peace and blessings to all the listening audience, and a special welcome to our guest who is gracious enough to join us from the land of Israel at the wee hours of the morning in Israel. But his dedication and his love for spreading the truth is greater than his desire to sleep, and we certainly appreciate that effort. But I want to say that I had the privilege of watching an interview he did recently, and his insistence upon scholarship and truth is more than commendable. It's absolutely necessary if we're going to make the kind of advancements that we need to make going into the next phase of our efforts to restore ourselves to the dignity that we all seek. And a young man with a family and a member of the Hebrew Israelite community and living in Israel for the last 15 years certainly qualifies him that alone. But he's also a man of advanced degrees in Middle Eastern studies. So this is not someone who just picked up something here and there. This is someone who dedicated himself, a young man who dedicated himself to studying at the highest levels to obtain not only a scholarly and an intellectual attitude, but the necessary tools in order to find this information. And when he found the information, to be able to go through the information and to separate truth from non-truth, and then able to present it in a manner that will cause us to realize that what we're talking about is a history not only of us, but the history of many peoples that we have to consider in our efforts. And so he has four sons in Israel. So not only a young man now, but young men under his tutelage for the future of us reestablishing ourselves in the land. So it gives me great pleasure to introduce Professor Kananya all the way from the Holy Land to speak to us directly. Professor, if you would, if you want to add on or amend anything that I said, please do. And once again, welcome to the Yehuda Nation First ICL radio program.
Shalom, shalom. Todah, Nasi. I hope that you guys can hear me and it's not an echo.
We do. We hear you loud and clear.
I would like. Okay, great. So I just want to thank Prince Asiel for having me on the show. And I'm going to talk about some of the things that I'm doing here as far as with the scholarship and legitimizing who we are as a people and validating our history here in this land, which I feel is very important. For years, we've been riding on the coattails of our forefathers who brought us here, and it's time for us to legitimize those individuals and not make them fictional, not let them be fictional characters, but actual people in history. And it's time for us to do that. And I'm working very hard doing that. And as far as what I'm working on currently, we're looking at trying to legitimize the scriptures. You know, for years we've been, the Hebrew has been a faith. And we're trying to evolve that. We're trying to evolve out of being a faith-based spirituality, but now being tangible, having a tangible identification with the Hebrews instead of having just a faith-based knowledge of them. And what I mean by faith is that we've been looking at the scriptures and trying to identify ourselves and cross-referencing Hebrewisms in the Bible with different tribes in Africa, and we've been accepting that as legitimacy of us being Hebrews. But I'm trying to evolve that and build off that to now make it a little more tangible where we can begin to do archaeological work, where we can begin to dig up temples and find manuscripts that legitimize us in another type of life. So that's some of the work I'm doing. If you're interested in any of the topics that I'm working on, one of them is the Elephantine Island, where archaeological work has been done, which has unearthed an ancient Hebrew community in Elephantine, which is in Nubia, which is in the southern part of the Nile. And what they found was Beit Knesset, many letters and documents, small things like marriage licenses, contracts for houses. And they found, we know that the people living there were Hebrews based on the documents. And we date these documents back to 500 B.C. under the Persian rule, the Persian Empire. And the documents indicate that the Hebrews were there as soldiers, as a military outpost for the Persian Empire. And the Persian Empire, if you know the story of Esther, who married the Persian king, Antaxerxes, that they were the ones who allowed us to go back and rebuild the temple after it had been destroyed the first time. So we see that they allowed us to build a community there. We raised our families in Nubia.
And Hello. Nation radio program that I'm running today. I want him to listen to. You can send him. Go right ahead.
So, what we're doing, what we're finding out is that maybe the Elephantine Island was a gateway for the Hebrews that went all through Africa. And we're theorizing that now, but it seems pretty solid that we can state this case not by just cross-referencing documents, but actually having evidence, you know, real solid evidence. And that's what we need going into the future. We cannot pass on faith to our children. We must pass on an identity, a real tangible identity, something they can see, something they can touch.
One of the things, Professor, that we wanted to highlight to the listening audience is that you, as part of that second generation that's growing up in Israel, is expanding the knowledge base and validating it beyond what everybody believes is just Bible reading or saying that we are the people of the Bible, but now we can easily document it from a Hebraic, African Hebrew point of view, the legitimacy of our beliefs and faith. See, we're not just talking about believing in God. We're talking about believing God and believing and trusting the God in us. So I wanted the audience to continue to tune into us so that we can continue to add pieces of the puzzle for their validation and for their real solid understanding of what we are doing and why we are doing it. So continue, Professor.
So, yeah, so that's one of the projects that, going back to who I am, I was spending up in the community for about 15 years now. I'm a school teacher. I'm an educator. I have an undergraduate degree in education. And I actually went to school also here in Israel and received a master's degree in Middle Eastern Studies and Middle Eastern North African Studies. So I am a historian, but I've also learned a lot, great deal, by being in the community. There are many scholars in the community. Prince Raphael being one of the chief scholars over the years, definitely been a mentor of mine. Now, me as a scholar, I'm working on a lot of different other things. As Shagir said, as Prince said, that I'm in the second generation. But I'm currently writing a book on the history of the second generation, where I'm writing a piece on the cultural development of the community since its inception. And what I'm looking at is identity formation in the children, you know, trying to keep track of us holding a firm grip on our children so they won't get lost, you know, in this world. You know, we have a vision for them, so it's important that we document and keep track of how we evolve and how this doctrine is evolving within our children. So I'm currently writing a book on that right now. But with the ancient history, I'm also doing that. And that one piece about the Elephantine, I'm pretty working on a document with that as well. So it's basically what the Prince said, that here we're trying to evolve the faith-based consciousness that we've had for over 40 years into something more tangible, you know. We all understand why we had that intuition and those feelings and how we felt connected to the Hebrew people when we picked up those scriptures. But it's not something we just can't hold on to that. We got to take it, you know, we just can't rest on that. We have to take it further and continue to validate who we are to the whole world and definitely to our children so we can pass on more than just faith. So we can pass on real knowledge, and that's what I'm all about.
What I'd like to do at this point is bring in Princess Yaina, who is the lead of the Yehuda Nation in terms of its founding currently in the reality of the world, and let her join in this conversation and ask any questions of what you have said so far, and then let her know that I want her to participate in this dialogue as we continue to inform the listening audience about our presence in Israel and why we are there. And continue on. Sister Yaina. Princess.
Yes, sir. I'm here. I'd like to say shalom to the gentleman on the line. I guess the question that I would have right now is, where do you see us coming into the land and the government's acceptance of who we are and providing us with the necessary resources to come back to the land?
Well, definitely what I'm doing is connected to that, because mm-hmm. for many years we depend on European archaeologists to find out, to discover who we are and to validate who we are. But we have to take the initiative to validate this stuff on our own. We need the archaeologists. We need to do the work ourselves. We can't wait for people to do it for us. And that's a problem. I think once we take the initiative to do the work ourselves, to bring forth the valid information, then we can discuss the political portion. But until then, we can't really get into the discussion because we're still waiting on them to validate us. The Bible is not going to validate us. That's not enough. We need more. And that's what I think is definitely connected to what you're talking about. It's going to take some time. But, you know, as we continue to work on both sides, you know, with the political and the scholarly work, we can definitely achieve that.
Okay, so I can understand. I mean, with all of the scientific technology that we have now, and we were doing a study about the Cave of Machpelah, which they claim that they have access to in Israel, and with all of the DNA testing and all the things that are going on, I agree with you 100% that no one needs to tell us who we are. We already have that. Whether or not they will officially prove it, or even we feel necessary for them to prove it, I'm not quite sure that matters either. But a lot of people are migrating to Israel right now. And from what I've heard, it is very they don't make it easy. You know.
No.
And, you know, how do we, for the people who are listening to us that are excited and ready to make the transition to the Holy Land, where do you see us at this point in juncture with the people who are occupying the land right now? You know, how do you see that changing?
What is important for us, first we have to look at us. What do we know about the people that's living here? Who really knows the history of the people that's in this land? I think that not enough of us know the history of the people that not only govern this land, but just the people that just live here, the common people. I did a show a couple of days ago, and I talked about the history of the Jewish people. And a lot of Hebrew Israelites, they don't understand the history of Jewish people. And when I'm saying that, I'm not saying that you all don't, but I'm saying that there's a lot of other Hebrew groups that don't. We're pretty much all over the place with our doctrine. you know, and don't think that they're not listening. They listen to things that we're saying, you know. They know what the Hebrew Israelite community is about, you know, or not about, you know. I think that if we had a clear perception of who they are, it might change our stance on them. See, I don't know if it all depends on them. Some of it does depend on us, you know, and I can't say what they will and won't do. You know, I can't say that. But all I can say is what we need to do. I can't speak for them because I really don't know. And I don't know how much we can trust them. But I do know that we have to do our part. And one of the things that we need to do is really research and find out who are the people in this land, you know, and come up. And we all need to be on one accord about our perception of them. Now, they've all around the world, these people are hated. That's politics, though. That's politics. But, you know, it's the Israeli-Palestinian conflict is a very complex conflict. It's a very complex thing to understand. And how many of us know a lot about that? Not many. Not many can give me the history of the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. So I think it's incumbent on us to really do our homework first, solidify our perceptions of them, and then we can address, maybe we can talk about what they will do. But I know they're watching YouTube. They know what's on this, what the Hebrews are saying. So how do we expect the Israeli government to be accepting or to even try to, help us in any kind of way? I think we're working against ourselves if we're talking about moving to Israel.
Well, I mean, you know, I can agree and I can agree and disagree. I guess from where I sit, it's incumbent upon us, you're right, to change our approach in everything that we do. It's necessary to change our approach because the people that are in power are supposed to be in power at this point, and there has to be an acceptance of that. You're right about YouTube. They own it. They own YouTube. They own Blog Talk Radio Show. They own most of the tools that we use to be able to communicate around the world. They run it. And they make it free so they can listen. And one of the things that we do at the Yehuda Project is to make sure that we stay as transparent as possible, you know, because our job is not to offend anyone. You know, we're not here to offend. What we're trying to say here in America is that for those who want to, and this is not the great exodus that a lot of people are expecting, but for those who want to go and to promote the economy in our own land, you know, because we can do that just like we did it here. You know, how do we make that transition smooth?
They would love that. If you're talking about money, they like that. That's their type of language. They speak that language. You know, you're talking about growth, building a better economy for Israel, that's the language that they speak. That's exactly what they want to hear.
Well, I mean, that's what we're talking about at this point because, you know, right now, you know, this is where we are in terms of structuring for the people to be able to go into the land. Now, we know that there's a lot of prophetic journeys that we're going to take and the great exodus of us going into the land. But at this juncture, at this stage of the game, it would be conducive for us to talk about promoting an economy over there because this one over here is definitely failing.
Definitely. And this economy here is rising. The shepherd is getting stronger and stronger here. And it's definitely opportunities being in this land. I mean, every time I take the bus and I go from one city to another, I look at the land and say how empty it is. It's empty. There's so much space here. And the Israelis are doing, I think they're trying their best to build here, but, I mean, there's not enough people. There's not enough people to fill these hills. fill these mountains. We the state of Israel definitely needs people. The youth, you got to know, the Israeli youth don't like Israel like that. So they leave Israel all the time. I mean, many of them leave. So they get out of high school or get out the army, they leave. So the population, they always in need of people, of bodies. And so immigration here is definitely something that we can, I mean, I think it's definitely something we can bring to the table for them. But what they're apprehensive is about the doctrine. You know, our doctrine, they've accepted us, you know, but it took them a while, you know, and, you know, we had to change and modify some things for them to do that. And we understood that, but we have to really change our approach, and that's basically the message that I'm saying. Before we start talking about what they're going to do, it is incumbent upon us to change our approach and our rhetoric, and even if we have to distance ourselves from certain groups, we have to do that because there's a, like I said, there's a whole lot of rhetoric coming out of the Hebrew Israelite community. I mean, some of the most radical things that I've ever heard, I mean, is coming out now. And it's not good for the community, the nation as a whole, you know, especially with us here being in Israel. It doesn't shine a good light upon us. And so, again, we have to approach the Israeli government in a way in which they would even be inviting or be, you know, inviting to us, you know.
And you know what? And I can understand that, and I appreciate that. And I wouldn't have a problem as far as the nation of Yehuda, but we would have to be able to, one, be able to maintain who we are in terms of lineage, and two, not be expected to convert into Judaism, but come over as the Hebrew Israelites, you know, because we believe in being professional all the time. I mean, this is something that we work on excellence all the time because we see the YouTube clips and some of the groups that are out there that are just giving us a bad name. So we, in order for us to act as a government in exile, we have to act like a government in exile so that we can approach it from a political standpoint. Because if we're going to come over, then we're coming over to boost the economy, to establish our presence in the land, and to change the fingerprint or the way that people perceive us.
Right.
Let me jump in.
Prince
Jaina, let me just jump in for a second. You see, one of the things that the international team was doing for 40-plus years, and that was, first of all, doing what the professor said, getting really to know the people in the land that had been there before we had gotten there, and then introducing ourselves to that land. I said earlier, there are 102 nationalities living in Israel and 83 languages spoken right now. So Israel is not one group of homogeneous people. It is very heterogeneous in terms of ethnicity and also cultural background. You got all kinds of Jews, from the Sephardic Jews to the Ashkenazi Jews to those Jews from Cochin, India. You got the Falashia Jews from Ethiopia. You got the Sudanese Jews. You got the Ashanti Jews from Ghana. You got the Limba tribe who believe they are Jews from Liberia. And we didn't know all of this when we got to Israel. And so we had to learn. We started in Dakar, Senegal, and started going across Africa to see how many on the continent actually believe that they trace their descendancy all the way to Israel. And when we got to South Africa, we found at least 5.5 million people of the Limba tribe believe that they are from Israel. So we had to learn all of that all over. Now, you can imagine if the people that came out of Europe and that they were Jews and that they had kept the faith alive for the last 1,500 years, and we didn't know it, we didn't know them, they didn't know us, because the Ethiopians couldn't even imagine any Jews being white. And just like the European Jews couldn't imagine any Jews being black. Until we began to see each other for what we are, and then understand the prophetic nature of being a speckled bird, we had begun to re-educate and retool ourselves. As the professor said earlier, when you get into Israel, you'll begin to see and understand at a whole nother level. So what you said, Sister Yaina, about maintaining our dignity, we've never been asked by the Israeli government not to be Hebrew Israelites. But when we first went in, we were saying that the Jews didn't have no right to the land because they were white, and that everybody black had a right to the land because they were black. Well, that's not reality in this current reality of the world, of politics, of economics and socialization. So we had to begin to retool ourselves back to a place that we had been connected from for thousands of years. But I was just telling an individual the other day, Princess, that the only record of a sovereign people based on spiritual basis getting the land was in 1948, when the current state of Israel was reestablished by the nations of the world as descendants of the biblical Israelites. And it wasn't narrowed down to color. It was narrowed down to practices. And the only practices that they knew at that time was the ones that were being practiced in Europe or in the Middle East or in North Africa as Jews. So when we begin to understand the origin, we began to sit and begin to discuss and begin to work it together. Your question about coming to Israel, as Ananya, the professor, said, the land of Judea in Israel from Jerusalem down through the Red Sea is empty. There are no people in the land of Judea. Four or five cities with small populations populate Judea. So that's not the issue. The issue is, what are we going to do with the land? Are we capable of keeping the water flowing? Are we capable of growing food? Are we capable of maintaining order and security? So if there's not an understanding of these things as we go in, we've got to begin to have these kind of serious discussions among ourselves. And that's one of the reasons that I moved around the world and America to talk about how do God, people in this day and time, begin to solve the questions that you're talking about. That's why we wanted to bring to the discussion a cross-section of people that we have been bringing to Israel who may or may not know that they descendants of Israel, but feel absolutely committed to building a better world. So I just wanted to put that in as we continue to do it and look forward to doing it. Professor, any comments? Jaina, any comments?
I'm sorry. No. I I do understand. I mean, you know, it's politics, and we do know that. And you know, there is a proper way to handle the situation, and we do know that. You know, it's just very difficult, you know, and watching the situation. And I know you guys have been there, you've lived there, you know the situation, you know the land, the government, and all of it. You know, but it's very difficult. I mean, but politically, I do understand. I understand exactly what both of you are saying politically. And you have to be politically correct at this point of the juncture, you know, and we have to make sure, you know, that we don't antagonize anyone, because that's not going to change our situation. So, yes, I do. I have a very clear understanding of what you're saying. You know, it's just the rhetoric that you hear of the groups that are here, you know, that are in America, you know, they are, you know, they have a different opinion about how this thing is going to go, and most of them will not come until they see or until they feel as though, you know, they can come and be accepted, because they consider, we consider that to be our land. And it is very, very difficult from this standpoint, and we've never been there. You know, we only know what we read in terms of the promise that was given unto our forefathers. And like I said, you know, the DNA is there. If what they say is true at the cave of Machpelah, they have Abraham and Sarah and Isaac and Rebecca and Jacob and Leah, according to Scripture. And if that is true, then the DNA, the possibility of the DNA coming to be tested, is there would be no doubt about it, in terms of whether or not we carry the DNA. But the problem is that everyone has a different prophetic perception of the Scriptures. And I have someone from area code 404, I think it's Adonai. Would you like for me to open up his mic?
Oh, absolutely. Go right ahead.
One moment. Brother Adonai, are you there?
Shalom. Can you hear me?
Absolutely. Yes, go right ahead, Brother Adonai.
Yeah, first and foremost, I'd like to say peace to you, Brother Asiel and L. Ron and the professor there, and thanks for coming on and giving us an update on that, on what's going on. But I think there's a process that we are a part of. What we're doing, what the professor there is doing now, is what's necessary. We have to substantiate and confirm who we are. And it's a process. I know from what I've been reading. Well, only I don't know it, but what I've been reading is that eventually we're gonna have possession of that land. You understand? The Europeans, those people that are in the land, that control the land right now, you understand, is moving out. The Almighty is doing his job. He said that he was going to prepare the land for us, so when we return, we won't have no worries. We can go to sleep and we'll be all right. You understand? We can sleep comfortably. You understand? So it's a process that has to happen. We're going through the process now. We are establishing ourselves as Hebrew Israelites in the land. Neither one of those people own the land, the Palestinians nor the Jews, and they're going to get out of there. It's been brought to my attention that the Almighty, the King of the Universe, has archangels, and at one time he gave Gabriel the charge to pit those fornicating nations against one another so that they could wipe one another out. That's what's happening right now. Our only job is to stay focused on us. We need to find out all that we need to find out. We need, like Brother Asiel said, he said that we got to have people that work with the plumbing, with the garbage pickup. You understand? And all of those things have to be established. And we're working on that. That's a process that's going on now. You understand? And it's right in line with what the Almighty had ordained for us. You understand? We don't know how he's going to do certain things. You know, we all speculate and all of that kind of stuff. But it's going to take some time. But the Almighty will give us the time that we need. remember, he stood up the sun in the sky for Joshua to complete whatever he was ordained to do. You understand? So I know that the Almighty will give us the time. We just got to stay focused. Hallelujah.
Thank you, all Brother right. Adoniat. Professor, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Any comments on what's been said or what questions or comments that have been said?
Definitely, I agree with everything that the brother said. And one thing came to mind when listening. If we're really ready to settle this land, we have to take the approach of the European Jew. And he's serious about what he's doing. Your American Jews come over here, they go and settle in the West Bank. They go and settle in the settlement. They take the land. And there's land laws here. If you squat on a piece of land for 7 years, it's yours. The government will give it to you. If you're able to squat on a piece of land here for 7 years, it's yours. So you got a lot of Jews coming from America and Europe. They come and squat on this land and they take it. I think that we have to have that same approach when we come here. Are we ready to go and take the land? Are we going to be settlers? And that might mean, this is a country at war. Are we ready to be in harm's way to take the land? We have to really understand how serious are we about doing this, because they're serious. They're very serious. Are we that serious? And if we are, hey, let's do this.
One of the things that we've tried to point out in being part of the informational arm of the Yehuda Nation and the Israelite scattered that hear the program, is that we come with the reality of once you go to that land as to what you must do and what has to be done in order to sustain yourself there. And that's what we continue to do. We had a very serious discussion this past Yom Rishon with those who believe themselves to be prepared to go out and revisit Africa and Israel as a land. When we left and went into Liberia, we had no idea that it rained 166 inches during the rainy season. So we took a little tent, and the first rain tore the tent up. We had no idea that what it took to dig a well and to bring water up in the interior. Now, you go to Israel, and Israel, the land of Judea, is in the southern part of the country. And there are no fresh bodies of water down that way. So the water for the Negev or Judea comes all the way from the Mediterranean and go through the process of desalinization to do it. And you've got the hot weather down in the land of Judea so that weather gets up to 110, 15 degrees Fahrenheit. So we've got to understand what it's going to take to live in that land. The land has different character. Some parts of Israel is cold. Some parts of Israel is extremely hot. Some parts are green, some parts are barren. And all of it has to be occupied by somebody and maintained by the people that occupy it. So when you're talking about nation building, you're talking about responsibilities and obligations that have to be done. So when you're talking about nationhood, you're not talking about somebody else doing something for you, as the professor said. You're talking about what you're going to do for yourself. And that's what we had to learn when we first went there. We had to build our own schools. We had to build our own stores. We had to begin to learn how to grow our own food and our own security, and on and on and on. So when you're talking about a nation, because we've been part of somebody else running buildings, when you look at those Western movies, it was some real people shooting at those settlers. When you look at going out west, Clark and Meriwether and them had to find the route to the Pacific Ocean and go through Death Valley. Death Valley didn't get that name because didn't nobody die. It got that name because people were dying trying to get to California. All of that was Mexican land until the Mexican-American War. So when we look at what the professor was saying about hostilities that are going on in that land, we're still arguing among ourselves. And we don't own a piece of land, and we're arguing about things that we have no idea when it comes to the reality of it. And so I'm simply saying it is now time to have sober conversations about whatever it is that we disagree about, but also sober conversations about what we agree about. So that's what the Better World is trying to do, is create the dialogue among the Israelites in America and in the world to begin to have discussions that are very sensitive. So that's my commitment, and that's what I'm praying every day, that we begin to continue to grow in that direction. Professor, anything before you close out with us?
Yeah, basically, what I was saying, for instance, that we have to have that type of commitment. You know, you see people migrating here. Like I was saying, European Jews is serious about migrating here. He doesn't go to the most comfortable places in Israel. The real serious Jews, they go settle right there on the West Bank and try to take the land. And I'm not saying we have to be that radical in our approach, but we at least have to show that type of commitment when we're coming here. You know, we're building the nation, you know. And even if we're a part of the state, if you look at it being a part of the state of Israel, this state is still growing. It's still a baby. You know, it's not a mature nation by no means. It's still expanding. So we have to have that same level of commitment when we come here. You know, and I'm not saying that we won't, but just trying to make it clear that, you know, there are other people who are coming here that do have that commitment. So we'll be clear about that. So we have to match that commitment if we want to achieve our goals.
Yaina, before the professor can start, any comments or questions?
Yes, sir. We have a couple of people who have pushed one, if he has a few minutes.
Oh, absolutely. We'll hold him.
I'm sorry?
Absolutely. We'll hold him, so go right ahead.
Okay, one moment. Area code 816, go ahead. You're on the air.
Is that Dr. Clark?
Area code 816. Yes, hello.
Hello.
Dr. Clark?
Yes, sir.
How are you, sir?
Great. I already let the audience know that you would be joining us. I sent my co-host, Sister Yaina, your curriculum vitae so that she would know a little bit about you. But now that I got you on the line, I'd like for you to introduce yourself and how you came in contact with me and the community in Israel.
I called because I just finished a day. You know, we pull teeth for a living, so, you know, no pun intended in that. We do that on the serious side of life, and we're thankful. I'm a dentist here in the Midwest, the greater Kansas City, Missouri area, and saying, you know, to the community, we came on board just as a result of attempting to work from our spiritual gifts and talents, seeing that there was a need for the help that we do from ministry, we thought that would be in the land. So my challenge is to the community, the radio community listening is, you may not be able to go and make the transition, but from your gifts and talents that you've been blessed to have and use, you can always bring and utilize those gifts for the community, which is really appreciated. It encourages others, and it's very motivating. Matter of fact, when we went over and did the dental clinic, saw all the children, we were blessed because there was more love came back to us that empowered us and kept us strong. So I was just so, you know, thankful to be a part of what's going on in Israel at the time, because what I'm listening to is just very pertinent, very powerful. And we all look and, you know, I mean, those who wait, well, you wait, but some of us don't have to wait. We can contribute from gifts and talents. In our community, unfortunately, there are not a lot of resources of finance, but more powerful, and the blessing is in what you've been blessed to do on a day-to-day basis, and that's all of us. So all of us are blessed beyond measure with gifts and talents that we can share, and in that sharing is where we win. We can start now with that.
And one of the things, Professor, I mean, Doctor, that I wanted you to share too, is you have a vision of economic empowerment that you and your wife have been working on since you've come back from Israel and continue to develop in Kansas. Would you like to share with the listening audience exactly what it is that you and Gail are doing?
Yes, thank you, Prince Asiel. One thing my wife and I are doing, there is a very... there's a presence on the Internet, and some of us, we learn things from the Internet, how to make a dollar, a dime, how to turn a website on. And it's very interesting, the process of learning a few things, not tricks per se, but just a few solid foundational tools and concepts that will help any family to go on the Internet and make a few dollars to move from their present condition to a income stream. Many of us, we're from the school of hard knocks. We try things, but this is something that my wife and I, over the last several years, have gone out and taken courses for. So from those courses, the blog that we have now, Prince Asiel, it's in the top 1% of the World Wide Web. So when I say this, is something that we understand and are very excited about, but we have a chance through content to write articles, and the world reads those articles, and it's we even have articles on our blog. People say, well, on a dental blog, why would you have something about Israel? But we can tie in or dovetail into any facet of life from what we're doing right now. That's all of us. So my wife and I, the site is dentist, the number 4, YOU.biz, dentistforyou.biz. That's our site. And we've been able, you know, just on content writing to have another income stream come into our office. And folks used to call and ask, well, how did you make that work? How do you make money by just writing articles? Well, what happens is, you use the World Wide Web as a volcano effect, and the traffic, the organic or the free traffic that comes to your site where people want to read your articles or come on and browse what you have for them, well, those articles, if they make sense and if they're worthy, people will read those articles, and every time they come on, and as you know, Google probably has about 77% of the traffic, and if you can get your website on the Google page of your niche, it gives you a chance to make money. So in our office, how we use that is it keeps us a presence on the Internet. If you had a computer now and you went to Emergency Dental Care KC. Emergency Dental Care KC is a keyword phrase that we use that people in the greater Kansas City area will call us. And to show the power of the Internet, we've had, well, I mean, you know, someone has even come 2.5 hours out on a weekend to where it's phenomenal the reach that you can do from a website. You can reach people around the world. So it's no lightweight thing that I'm talking about. If and all of us, for the most part, have, you know, some type of need for finance. So going about it, making a long story short, we make our phone ring locally with international traffic. And that's been a major, major blessing for us where, you know, when the economy hit, it was really tough because our people are left out of the healthcare system. And because minorities, for the most part, are left out of the healthcare system, then we have found a way to continue to, you know, move on with what we do. So it's been a very positive thing for us to get out and learn information that has helped us to, you know, stay in the game, as we say.
Doc, are you interested then in the listening audience joining what you and Gail have done and learn how to do that so that they can empower themselves to generate resources, because we are building a national consciousness in America with the Yehuda Nation so that people can begin to enjoy income streams before they go anywhere and after they go somewhere, continue to do that. Can they learn how to do that through your structure and organization?
They could. And matter of fact, people who are new to the web or who have always kind of sit back and said, well, I'd do that if I knew how. Well, the first thing we tell them is, because we get a ton of comments that come in on our website, so we have a pulse on what the Internet is doing. And people come to our site and they look, it's a site that I built, you know, in my spare time. I tell people it takes about 15 hours a week, but most of us, we have more time than finance, you know, which is the way it works for most of us. But the first thing would be to use the blog as a model of how to build a website. It was the software that runs the site is WordPress. And WordPress is a software that a lot of websites are run on. It's a free software. But the beauty of the WordPress is that it gives you an opportunity to, it's very user-friendly. But the point I'm making in going to the site, dentistforyou.biz, people use it as a model for beginners who come to either blogging or to build a website. Because when they read the articles, they see the keywords, and it starts to make sense how to write the article so that you can start to generate traffic. Because if you're going to do a website that way, where you're going to build it yourself, the best way, of course, is to have somebody build it for you. But the problem with that is you don't always know what you're going to get. So to answer your question, the first thing is they go to the website and see if it's something that they want to actually get interested in. There are families, Prince, that have, say, some of the younger members of the family where the kids are on video games and they understand the web very well because their smartphones, you know, they're always their iPads and tablets. They're doing things on the web every day. So it's very easy for them once they're kind of directed. So, yes, we ask people first to go to our site and start reading articles or take a look so they can see the framework of it.
Perfect. I'm going to ask you to always be a part of everything that I'm doing and that we're doing so that we can continue to build that connection that I know your commitment to, because you and your wife travel to Israel at your own expense and spent that time to help the people, the children of Israel, get dental care where the government at that time was not giving any health care to the people. which is part of the sacrifice that the early pioneers going to Israel had to make. But because of our faith in the great God, he brought spirits like yours and your wife and others to that land to minister to his people. So we are clear that you are one of those spirits sent as we repair and rebuild the nation of God's people. I want you to know that I intend to keep you lifted up and keep you and your wife and family close to us, and that anything we can do, we better do it. Would you have any words of advice for us who want to continue to build an alternative for our people as to what you think should be done?
What I would say, and again, all of us are busy people. We're thankful for the blessing of busyness. So I would give my phone number, Prince Osio, to you, and then if anybody called in and they wanted more information, I would try to send them information as best I could. But the first thing I would just say, 816-333-4110. And, you know, generally because, again, we're working on the Internet in the evening, we will get back with you. You know, it's not as timely because we don't have a full staff working on this. This is something we do part-time to make our phone ring here in the office. But once we found out how to, as they say, crack that nut, you know, now we're focusing on turning that stream up because, you know, you need to hire at some point people where you get a webmaster or somebody to help you with it if you just have no knowledge. But I would be more than happy to give people at least some type of outline or put it, you know, on our website and just give them a reference where to go find it and to look. But like I tell everyone, the best thing is, the best example is the shining star that we have put a ton of time in, to where now we have over 600 articles that we've written on that site. So your articles become, as they say, the bait where you're out, you know, on the Internet fishing. And my colleagues even here, they ask, well, how are the people benefiting? How are you using the people over in Germany or over in Australia or Japan or even Israel? How are you using those individuals to help? And I just tell them the volcano effect, to where we appear on the first page, because if you don't appear on the first page of Google, you don't really get a chance to have people that you're looking for. If, you know, you have a business, or if you're thinking about some type of business, there are thousands of niches on the Internet. And, again, I'm just a firm believer, whatever talent or gift that you have been blessed to have, you can make that work. And we tell even our patients, start from where you are right now through your spiritual gifts and talents. You can't go wrong when you start there, because that's where your passion and your burning desire to keep moving and to not give up when you wonder where to go next. Because once you start the path, I tell everybody, take the stone, like Deepak Chopra said, and you drop it into the pond. And each ripple from that stone that you drop into a quiet pond is an intention for you to acquire and have what you desire. So as you look at the ripples of that pond going out further and further, that's your reach into the world. So we use that same example and decided to build a website, and, you know, we're seeing the fruits of that labor. So even though we're busy people, we didn't really have the, you know, time to commit to it totally, but we had enough time to make it successful. So when you get something in the top 1% of the World Wide Web, where right now there's 1 billion websites, but 25% of them are what they call parked or inactive because people gave up. So that still leaves about 700 million websites on the World Wide Web that are functioning, operational, and moving forward. So that tells you it's working for someone.
Right. Thank you so very, very much. I'm going to ask Sister Yanina, before you get off, if there are any questions or comments about what the doctor has shared with us?
Oh, I have a couple of people that have pushed one, area code 757. Go ahead, you're on the air, and after that I'll get 678.
Okay, go right ahead, 757.
Okay, shalom, shalom.
Shalom,
Red
shalom.
Dina.
Thank you so
All
much.
Right.
Bye-bye.
All right, I wanted to just thank the brother that just finished talking. I wrote down some notes, and I got a lot out of what you were saying, but I really wanted to ask a question and make a comment about the earlier conversation. When we talk about us as a people, us as a nation, you know, I wanted to ask if you would share your vision of Israel in terms of, you know, are we going back to a pastoral kind of ancient way of living like our ancient forefathers did? And these are, I know that no one's got this answer, but if you'll bear with me, are we going to be a, you know, I've known Israelites that think it'll just be like a garden and a paradise kind of environment. I know people that will think, well, we'll be a sovereign nation with a mixed multitude. And you know, so are we thinking global here? Are we thinking of some people will no longer exist? Are we thinking that, you know, our enemies will lay down? I wondered if you could share a little bit on the big picture. You know, some of us do a deductive kind of reasoning. Some of us do an inductive kind of reasoning. I'm a big picture kind of person. But, you know, at the same time, we are here on the ground doing our best to get back to our nation, doing our best to be a nation again, a collective and, you know, a family of people. And there's still some differences of opinion on so many different levels. So that was one question I wanted to ask. You know, we're not going to do it politically, I don't think, not to say what tomorrow can bring, just based on my experience. I don't think military force is going to get us there, nor economics. While we're working on those economics, and those are all good things to consider, you know, it's always the most high factor. And I think we are in a place where we want to do, we want to go, we're crying out, we understand who we are, we're looking for independence, and, you know, how do, you know, what exactly is someone's big picture, you know, and then the timing as well. You know, I've had a brother tell me, well, you'll know it's time because the Most High always selects like a prophet, like a Moshe or an Abraham or King Dawid. So I wondered if you could share a little bit of insight and understanding on that. I also wanted to again thank you on the conversation. It's just, it's so inspirational to me, and that's not even the best word I could use for that. It's a dialogue. It's a growing Yom Rishon conversation. It was magnificent. You know, affecting the people, being out and about, being a good, being visible, and being part of a global. Are we going to be a global leader? You know, I mean, these are things that I'd like someone to share their insight on, their beliefs, their spiritual inspirations, just for me as an individual. And again, I thank you all. I just admire you so much for everything that you're doing, and I feel the Most High is with you, and I feel the Most High, and he's leading me to this conversation and leading my life in some great ways, and I feel it in your words as well. And so prayerfully we're all, you know, heading in the right direction. But Kane, just that big picture of where Israel is going and how we're going to get there, and the timing of that.
First of all, my sister, I thank you for that question and for those comments. I'd like for Sister Yaina to give the vision that she envisioned that God had given her for the Yehuda nation as you laid out those various questions. So Sister Yaina, speak to that first, and then I'll have various speakers on the phone give their perspective on what piece of that big vision do they see themselves playing and how it plays to the larger picture.
It's a very complex question that she's asking. But as far as the nation of Yehuda is concerned, our mandate is to gather our people as they become conscious as to who they are, to be a a solid foundation where the people can come and find an intelligent answer to their questions that they may have, so that we will gather ourselves as a nation, so that when the time comes for us to make the exodus, that we are prepared in terms of ethnicity, language, culture, and understanding. In terms of she made a comment about she didn't think it was going to be done economically, she didn't think it would be done politically, and we definitely are not going to do it by military force. Well, those things, those particular situations, I would have to beg to differ in some areas. Because as we build right now for the Amitas and the men that are putting the Amitas together and women that are putting them together over in Israel, they have formed the Amitas so that the people who want to come now will be able to come into the land and have a legitimate entity where they can come up under, because the immigration laws are very strict, from my understanding, and you just can't come in and just decide that you want to become a citizen. So that is where my question came in earlier, you know, how relaxed are, you know, the Israeli government with us coming into the land right now and establishing ourselves now. We will go into the land and we will establish ourselves, but we have to be able to do that as Hebrew Israelites and not as Israeli converts. So our goal is to, again, prepare our people with the language, the culture, the understanding, and then be able to walk into our land and promote the economy if you want to do it now or later. Now, prophetically, there are a lot of things that are said prophetically that are going to happen. In terms of us gaining access to our land, in terms of us being taken back to our land, in terms of the prophecy or the 400-year prophecy, all of those things are there. But for one person to singly determine how we're going to get there as a nation or when we're going to get there as a nation, that has to be left into the hands of the Most High, because it's way bigger than us. So, you know, I think that each person has a part to play, and it's like a chessboard. It's a strategic chess game, and each person has a part that they have to play. So our part in being from the royal house of King Dawid and establishing the nation of Yehuda, our goal is to, again, be a solid foundation, a nation in exile, establishing protocols and different entities so that when the time comes for the exodus, the people will be able to come in and get an intelligent answer. We will be able to sit down and lay out prophecies, because it, at the end of the day, and I always say this, it's just going to be a matter of whether or not you put the blood over the doorpost, because no one can tell you, Prince Asiel, when it's time. No one can tell me. It's an individual choice that we're going to have to make, whether we hear the voice of the Most High or whether we don't. And I say this all the time. When Moshe was leaving and they were getting ready to leave Egypt, once somebody's husband told his wife, we're not killing that animal. Moses is crazy, and we're not going to put that blood over the doorpost. Well, out of disobedience, he woke up the next morning and somebody died. It didn't mean they weren't in line and leaving with the masses, because that was a sure-tell convincer that the Most High was real, but they left understanding that they were being disobedient. So as a nation, and leaving together as a group, I don't think anybody can pinpoint that.
Professor, any comments on the question that the sister raised?
I thought she had a very practical approach and outlook and perspective.
Could you speak just a little louder? I know it's early in the morning there.
Yes.
Okay.
That she had thought about this a great deal, and that she approaching this situation in a practical way, which is good. Yeah, I think the brother that was online who said that this is a process, I think he said it best. This is a process, you know. There's a lot of different things that need to take place for us to have a smooth exodus back to this land. But we must remain committed to the process, you know, and understand that it is a process, and it will be challenging, you know. I think that how we envision us coming to the land is very important. Again, we were talking about the people that are already here. You know, do we see ourselves living side by side with them? You know, is that how we're looking at things? Do we see ourselves one day the Creator giving us this land and kicking them out? You know, how are we viewing that? I'm not sure how everybody is viewing it, how do you do the nation. I'm not sure how everybody's viewing that. But it's that whatever the way you're viewing that is going to play an important role in this happening. I think that's, I have to say that. If that's going to play a role, because, again, 50% of the people here are African Jews. Though they may look white, you know, they may have light skin, but these people have African origins here. And the prophecy is about all Hebrews returning back to the land. And we must understand that, you know, and be flexible, you know, in our ideology and our philosophy of whatever Hebrew philosophy or ideology you may have. We have to be flexible, and we have to learn more, you know. And that's, to me, that's where, you know, this is a process, and we have to consider, you know, how do we view ourselves being here, which is, I think, this is, again, it's going to play an important role in how we transition into this.
Dr. Clark, any comments on the topic that was just put out there? You got any thoughts on it? Maybe we lost the doc. My sister, just hold on 1 second, Prince L. Ram.
Yes, sir.
Any comments on sister's thoughts or comments that she had?
Well, first I'd like to say peace and blessings to her, and we certainly appreciate her input, her insight, because it's right in line and right on time with the spirit, if you will, that's blowing right now, that we need to rethink, reconfigure, reapproach all of our aspirations, and we need to do that with a 2014 worldview. And whatever it includes or whatever it excludes, we certainly have to be willing first to have the conversation. A lot of what we're talking about now, we were either not willing to, for whatever circumstances, to have the conversation, dismissing the conversation, ignorant to the reality, or whatever. But now is that time where we become aware of the world that we live in right now. As Dr. Clark had mentioned about the Internet, we live in a world of instant connectivity. We're not going to be isolated anywhere unto ourselves. Any nation, everywhere, there are people from all over the world, or people who are not necessarily of that ethnic group or that family group or that religious group or that economic group or whatever group that it is. We have to find a way not only to include ourselves but the willingness to include others in a realistic way, and in a way the same manner that we want to be ourselves to be included in world community.
My sister, are you still on the line?
Do you want me to open her mic back up?
Yes, I want to.
She's still here. Hold on one moment. All right, Sister Dinah, are you there?
Hey, I'm here. I'm listening. Thank you. Thank you, everyone, for the answers and input. Hallelujah.
Sister Dinah, I would like for you to tell us what your understanding is of those questions that you asked.
Well, my understanding on the level that I've been blessed with so far, of course, is to put the Most High first in every endeavor, and I think we would all agree on that. I think oftentimes we want to, you know, we understand the power and the glory and the majesty of the Most High, and we, you know, we embrace that, but we still endeavor to do some things on our own, which is, I guess, okay, you know, but in human nature and given the, you know, the circumstances that we've experienced here in America, I mean, and I'm here in America. So on that level, I pray that the Most High will lead me spiritually. I pray for wisdom, knowledge, and understanding always, and keep my ways aright. And I know that that is first and foremost for me. You know, I've really stepped out on faith on a personal level in a couple of areas. And every time I get maybe to what seems like a closed door, you know, it opens up for me again. And so I know the Most High is leading me in a way right now. He's led me to this conversation on this evening. Faith and putting that faith, that emuna salema, that perfect faith, if you will. I love that word, perfect. You know, most people say no one's perfect. I love to use that word, perfect. And so for me, it's a spiritual endeavor. I am an entrepreneur. I'm an educator. I know that with wisdom comes all things. And so I'm doing my best to balance what I can do with the Most High's blessings. And so, you know, I see us as having and meeting this conversation. I see us as, you know, different families of visual life. That's why that conversation on Yom Rishon was so significant. And, you know, I'm trying my best to share that with the ancient Israelite family, if you will, which I am one of those. I'm an Old Testament commandment keeper Israelite, and I'm doing my best to also understand what we would call the Messianic, because to me it's important to understand that and to grow and to benefit and to share love, peace, patience, and with a humble spirit, and let the Most High lead me. And I know that he knows my heart as a willing servant is going to take me on the path that I need to do. So, you know, making money is good. Political is good. Reaching families is good. Volunteering is good. Touching base with people that don't have any understanding are all considerations that, you know, we as a family of people must consider and lend ourselves to. So, in terms of going home, you know, I could see that today, really. And we'll make an excuse. And right now, I've got an 80-year-old mother. And y'all, who I bless, a young, vibrant, fly, healthy 80-year-old mother. I don't have a lot of family. You know, she doesn't really have the same understanding as I do, although she respects me. And so if there's a but or a why I'm not ready to leave yet and go home, that would be it, and I'm praying for the Most High to help me, help my family to work that out. You know, I'm not going to leave her, but if it wasn't for that one person, I've got sons, I've got not much more holding me here, you know. You know, I think it's a matter of getting over there and doing what we can do versus being over here. I mean, we could be over there in the land. And people say, well, no, it's not time yet. They treat it like this. The land is barren. It's bastard. You know, it's dirty. It's this. It's vile. You know, I pray that the Most High will allow me to not just visit, but live there in my lifetime. You know, I'm praying for my family in the future of Israel. Also, to actually live there and realize that redemption is imperative, it's essential, and it's something that I do meditate on day and night. And so I pray I've answered your question. I'm lending myself out, lifting up my voice, praying seven times a day, and believing really your perfect faith in the power of prayer and having that vision. I'm also a mind over matter person. I know that as a man's heart thinketh, so is he. So we have to keep our hearts very diligently, because out of them come the issues of life. So we see ourselves as not ready, if we see ourselves as disorganized, if we see ourselves as unworthy, then that's a reality that's going to manifest itself. And so, you know, my vision and my thoughts are probably not typical, but that is who I am. You know, it's a understanding the lev, the mind, and the power that the Most High talks to us through. You see, we don't really hear a voice. Something touches our heart. Something comes in our mind, and as we think, we begin to speak. And as we speak, we begin to do. So I'm a person that I'm just trying my best to make a mental understanding, have a, not just my own mental understanding, but be in communication, in conjunction, and with the people, like unto myself, that are going in the same direction. Hallelujah. That's what I wanted to share on that question.
Thank you so very, very much for your input and your articulation of where you are. If you had to build an institution within the community, the nation that you envision, what would be the institution that you would join to be a part of building?
Well, that's a great question. Every great question deserves a great answer. I am an educator by profession for the last 25 years, and so my love is for the children, and that's probably my first and interest. I also I think of myself as a great communicator. I'm not an upfront person, so I'm not that person to be on the soapbox, you know, drawing people to me. You know, my endeavors right now are to give back to my community in the sense of free tutoring and homework help for the children in the neighborhood that I not live in but have a relationship with. And so, you know, inspiring people and letting them, the neighborhood see, come and ask questions. Well, who are you? What are you doing? Why are you doing this? And, you know, with their loving spirits that God-given, Yahweh-given, Elohim-given understanding, I pray that they will see in me something that inspires them to, you know, want to ask more, want to change, want to be more, want to lend their ears to knowing who the Creator is. And that's kind of my purpose.
What area of education would you concentrate on to teach the children?
I'm an elementary school teacher. I think I could, that would probably be my area. I'd like to stay concentrated on anything from pre-K through 6th, 7th, 8th grade. I can be of service with.
What would you change differently about the educational structure that you're teaching now that you would improve for a better life for the children as they become adults? What would you include in that training?
Well, you got your basic reading, writing, and math kinds of situations that every child on the needs to be able to be on a world-class level with that. Probably an historical perspective is essential, and emotional but esteem-building understanding of who the Creator is. It's something that, you know, we're not taught in school, that we are capable, that we are at least equal and at most blessed. And those are things that are not taught in school. You know, affirmations and letting children know that there's something other than the system. See, you know, I've worked for all my life from 14, and I'm a senior now, even though I still claim 39, so don't tell anybody I'm a senior, but that's okay. And I've done my best to work in the system to and not, you know, stand out in terms of being rebellious or not compliant or not a conformist. I've never been like a conformist kind of person. So that's kind of a great question, reading, writing, being able to express yourself, being able to interpret, being able to just operate on a world-class level is probably the things I think are important for our children today, not just getting by, you know, not just passing, but excelling in everything, in anything, any endeavor, be it cooking, be it mechanical, be it political, if you want to, you know, pursue that kind of a career. I think we'll need all of those kinds of excuse me, young people and elders to operate on in a global world class level. And that was kind of what was, you know, inspired my question to you. You know, do we see ourselves really being a global world class people? And what I mean by world class, just, you know, in the center of everything that's going on. Are we thinking that everyone will come to us and bow down and see, change their ways of thinking and, you know, accept us? So, you know, this is kind of what inspired my question on earlier when I first raised my hand to.
Well, the reason that I dialogue with you, I wanted to see what your thoughts are and where it relates to that, but also just so that you'll know, too, that the scriptures, your history tells us that if you die before 100, you're a baby. So you really are 39. You are that baby. You are that. You know. So I congratulate you for being a teenager, you know.
Thank you.
And mother, you know, we brought 80-year-olds out of America for many a year. Over the 40-something years, we've always never left our mothers and fathers behind to bring them so that they would have a chance to touch that land, live in that land. So be prepared to entertain those thoughts and ideas as well. I wanna go to say to us who are listening that this kind of dialogue is important so that we begin to know each other, not just from the conversation, but the depths of understanding, because when you're talking about a nation coming together, we got to at least begin to communicate. And everybody don't think the same or say it the same way, but if we got a foundation that we're all standing on, which is what I'm trying to establish for discussion, then we'll pretty much know which direction, as the educator said, that we want to go ahead and concentrate on to perfect and bring that into reality. As we begin to wind down today's program, I want to go back to Nasi El Ram. We had a couple of other topics that we wanted to introduce into the hearing of the audience. And what are they?
Okay. We wanted to the listening audience to begin to ask themselves where they are personally, if the not just as Hebrew Israelites or not just Hebrew Israelites, but all the entire listening audience, is where are they, where are we on world issues? Are we abreast of world issues? Are we aware of how things are taking place in the world today? This issue of sovereignty, we're not the only people with a sovereignty issue. Today, there was an arrangement made between in the Ukraine, between the forces that were fighting and identified as rebels and the government in Kiev. There was an agreement that autonomy or sovereignty over the regions in question was granted to those people. Okay, so again, the issue of sovereignty is an issue that people are wrestling with and making great sacrifice to achieve. Okay, so at the world level, at the international level, when you talk about these issues, you have to be willing to talk about these issues at any level that you encounter them. Also, that there was a situation we mentioned a few weeks back about the health situation as it related to the Ebola virus, and that you've been keeping up with that story. It has grown and grown and grown and grown, and now it's been parlayed into a situation where the U.S. has committed 3,000 military troops to Liberia to go help with the Ebola outbreak. Again, you know, we need to consider that's more troops than have been committed to Iraq at this time. So the world is operating on a lot of premises. We want to make sure that we're aware of them, that we understand them, that we're able to have insight into those positions, and then to also substantiate and build our position as well. So not just locally, regionally, statewide, nationally, but internationally, our perspective has to be on point so that we can advance our issues as well as other people are advancing there.
And one of the things that I like to ask, what would 3,000 soldiers do to fight Ebola, Prince Elrond?
Well, without any medical training, without any understanding of it, the first thing that I would note is that for all they're saying about Ebola, they're sending 3,000 troops to the Ebola areas. Okay, so they're not worried about contracting Ebola. I want to say that first. Secondly, if they're not trained as medical people, which is what the issue has been, that's why people who had Ebola, they sent them to America because they didn't have the medical facilities. If you're not sending medical facilities, but you're sending soldiers, the first thing is that if you send an army, nobody expects an army to come without arms, okay? First of all, you know that the army is coming and they're bringing weapons. So my question is what? They're going to shoot Ebola? Okay, so we have to have eyes to see and ears to hear. If they're going to shoot Ebola, or they're going to restrict or police or militarize the people in terms of containing them, roping them up. I mean, what? Okay, so these are the kinds of things that we have to ask about that situation. They didn't mention medical supplies. They didn't mention doctors. They didn't mention any of those things. They mentioned that they were sending 3,000 soldiers, military personnel, to deal with Ebola. That's their response to Ebola in Africa. And the circumstances, they say, I heard someone speaking on it today, now they're going to say that it's going to, if we don't do something, it's going to proliferate into tens of thousands of deaths, et cetera.
I think that when Mr. Yaina raised the question within the last month about Ebola, and we were watching it to see just what the World Health Organization as well as the top governments are doing as it relates to that, I think that we need to investigate very seriously what does 3,000 soldiers do on behalf of the victims of Ebola or the areas that have been infected by it. So I think we need to keep that story alive in the midst of us so that we are well aware of the international implications of such a disease. As we wind down, I want to see if we got any other callers on the line that we can take their calls.
Yes, sir.
Okay, go right ahead.
All right, you have two callers left. I'm going to start with area code 678 and then 443. Area code 678, go ahead, you're on the air.
Shalom. Yes, I was invited to come and have a discussion. I didn't know if I was to chime in or how that was all to work out.
Yeah, that's it. This Benaiah?
This is correct.
Yes, sir. Welcome. And it was I who called you. And we just called in. I mean, you're welcome to call in, comment, to give your insight. We appreciate the insight that you gave last week. It was insightful. And, you know, we wanted to let you know that you're welcome and invited to the program to help us work through these issues that are confronting us. So you're free to comment on anything that was said or unsaid on tonight's program. Yes, sir.
Yes. Thank you. One of the things I would like to first, you know, come in and say is that I appreciate the opportunity to come in and speak amongst such men of renown, yourself being included. But I would like to say, brother, somewhere on your path, you went wrong. the reason I say this is because there's statements made as far as going back to the land at this time, and then there's contradictory statements of, well, we don't know how the Creator is going to do this, but we'll just leave it to the Creator. But there are people in the land at this time who flew home, so we know exactly how you're planning to get there. But we bring the Creator in as in we don't know how we're going to do it. Secondly, we're speaking of the 400 years as this being near completion. The 400 years does not even pertain to us at this time. That had something to do with us coming up out of the land of Mizraim with the Canaanites, iniquities becoming fulfilled. At this time, if you go to Hosea 6, this is what applies to us. Hosea 6, verse 1 through 3, where it says, come and let us return unto Yah, for he hath torn and he will heal us. He hath smitten and he will bind us up. After 2 days will he revive us. In the third day he will raise us up and we shall live in his sight. Then shall we know if we follow on to know Yah, his going forth is prepared as the morning, and he shall come unto us as the rain, as the latter rain and the former rain unto the earth. And that brings me to my third point, which is the land at this time is not the land that we are to desire that was promised to our fathers, Abraham, Yisakway, Yisrael. The land at this time is a land of desolation because of our iniquities towards the land. The Father said, while we are not there, the land shall enjoy her Sabbaths. You know, so to desire a land of rocks and desert at this time, it really does not apply. But the Father does tell us when and what he is going to do to the land. sequence of events is that the Father has to give the cup of trembling, even the cup of fury that we drink, the dregs. The nations have to drink that cup as well. They have not drunken that at this time. The world economy is one economy, you know, oil, petroleum, the likes. That has not broken in any sense. These people are living on high on the hog, so to speak. As filthy as that animal is, that's where they are. They're living high. They are not low at this time. It's jumping the gun to be going home at this time. Yes, there are people in the land. They've built this and established that. But I almost want to say it's like we're living in a dream which is going to turn into a nightmare. And the reason I say so is because the Father says that he's going to raise his hand again the second time to recover the remnant of his people. That's in Isaiah 11. He also says in conjunction with that in Isaiah 34 that his sword shall be bathed in heaven. So he's got to destroy the gods of the earth, which is what showed these people of today how to set up, run, and even orchestrate this world system that they have thought themselves to lord over. None of that has come forth at this time. So to jump the gun and go home, brother, I would say we really need to reconsider that because there are plenty of places where the Father says we should wait on him. There are things that we can be doing at this time as well, which is coming out of the midst of the people, returning to our old paths, seeking Abraham and Sarah, Abraham, thy father, and Sarah that bear you. What are we to seek from them? The old path. It tells us in the law, Deuteronomy 32, seek ye the old path. What are the old paths? The old path is herding, keeping flocks, agriculture, things of that nature. I don't mean to drop such a bombshell on the technology age, but, brother, I got to because computers, get that far out of your mind because that is not what the Father says we are returning home to. The Father says he's going to rearrange this earth. There will be valleys where hills were, and there will be hills where valleys were. The Father also says as far as the land being dried up at this time, when we return home, it's going to spring forth. There are scriptures to validate everything that I'm saying. The land is going to spring forth and bud up. I would like to throw some comment back on what I'm sharing here.
Okay, well, mm-hmm. Yes, we're here, and we're listening. And well, first of all, hello.
I was going to have Sister Yaina comment on the brother's statement as it relates to the Yehuda's Nation vision, as it implies what he just said.
Well, that just increases what I said earlier in terms of Scripture, because according there's a lot of people, as you and I were speaking earlier today, that believe in the wilderness concept. They believe that, you know, we won't go back to the land. We will go to the wilderness, and that in the wilderness is where the valley of waters will spring up, and the animals in the desert will be excited because there will be water where there was dry land, and fruit trees will grow up, and that we will be in the wilderness protected and shielded from World War III. There is also some people that believe that the land will be cleaned out and completely cleaned out before we go in, and that we will clean dead bodies up for 7 months according to Scripture, that we will put markers by dead bodies, and there will be a group of people there to make sure that the bodies are out of Jerusalem before we go in. And that is where I'm saying it's a matter of interpretation. A lot of people believe that we're going to be on one accord when we go into the land or when we leave America. So, I mean, you know, all of these things, as I spoke about earlier, are a matter of perception, because we have a lot of different people perceiving the Scriptures. And this, I won't say the Scriptures differently, the sequence of the Scriptures and how they apply differently. So, I mean, you know, from this young man's perspective, you know, he has a point where he feels like, you know, that it's not time yet for us to go into the land. A lot of people feel like that here. But what I was saying earlier is that there are people in the land now that have established the Hebrew Israelite presence, and the Amitah and all of the things that are being designed for those who want to go over and work is no different than if you moved to England. I lived in England for 3 years. So you have the right to go abroad and live in any country that you would like. You know, and Israel is no different. It doesn't mean that this is the exodus, though, out. But for the people who want to go over and promote the economy, then I think that that is what we're all trying to do at this point.
Elram, your comment.
My comment is pretty much similar to what Sister Yaina said. I mean, we're looking at things from a worldwide perspective, in that there are many different opinions and approaches, and that because we have a different opinion or a different approach doesn't mean that we can't work cooperatively for our common interests, okay? Whether the brother says it's the wrong time to be in the land or that he's waiting for a different time, we still can work together if we both say we want to end up in Israel. So I don't see those as limiting factors. I see them as interpretation. And so the point, not only of the radio program, but any dialogue that we would have, was that we can come together with our interpretations and work out the details so that we can get something done.
The purpose of this program is always to dialogue, and we don't have to agree with everything everybody said, but we do, as Voltaire said, defend the right for them to say and to express their views, their opinions. And then I always say, then please do the way the Creator has moved you to do, so that you can make sure that you're in harmony with what you understand those Scriptures to say to you, and do that. So I suggest that that's what everybody needs to do, so that they can feel that they are doing the will of God as it's been told to them. Because this is a very complex situation, and these are very difficult times. And those of us who are sincerely seeking the direction of the Creator, He will bring us to that point where we will hear and understand each other. This has been a great program this week, and I'm looking forward to further dialogue. And if you got any closing comments, I'll be glad to entertain them.
We have one more caller. Do you want me to open up the mic for this last caller?
Yes, go right ahead, please.
Shalom.
Area code 443, go ahead, you're on the air. Area code 443.
Hey, shalom, shalom, family. This is your host for calling. I always enjoy this conversation for the humility, particularly when dialogue is allowed in the conversation, because often you don't see that in Israel. But my question has to do with building, because I'm serious about building. I'm serious about preparing our people. As Sister Yaina would confirm, I'm already a part of the nation, and I'm working vigorously to do my part. That being said, I remember 10 years ago, I met a group of people, a congregation, over to Ghana, and I remember the many pitfalls that I was even admonishing a group that went over there after us, a few groups. And this is to a prince, Nasika, as well as to the other princes online. If you could have some tangibles for us so that we will not have to duplicate some of the things that you all saw and experienced over the 40-plus years that you all were part of the community over there that can be avoided, how would you admonish or encourage us? So if you, because I remember you stating last week, I believe, when you were in Ghana, you asked questions, something must be wrong. It reminds me of Haggai asking the people to consider their ways when things aren't going the way they know that they should. So in your estimation, because I know some things that I experienced when we went to Ghana, and this is before we knew of any other community, because we met members from the community over in Dimona in Ghana. That was my first meeting with anybody, because we were just moving. We had moved about 2 years from Christianity. That being said, from you all's experiences, I know time is short, and you might want to continue this next time, but if you could share with the audience some things that we could avoid, that we don't duplicate these things, maybe their ego, maybe iniquities, because I try to tell people all the time here, don't take the mess that you got here over there. Become naked before Yah here, because over there trying to learn a new culture, a new environment, it's a totally different ball game. Deal with your mess here. Become naked before Yah like Jacob did before he became Israel. So I would relinquish the mic, and I thank you for the opportunity to ask the question, and I'll listen.
I think, Brother Yehoshua, you're right on as it relates to that question, because the reason that I agreed to do the program with the Yehuda Nation is that I thought that rather than my 46-plus years of being outside of America be guessed about, I would make myself available to be asked, just like you asked. And those men and women who have lived outside of America, such as yourself and your experience in Ghana, that we could document. We may not know everything to do, but we definitely know some things not to do that brought about those kinds of curses that Deuteronomy speaks about. What I recommended for me to do is to be available to ask questions, not give definite answers to everybody's question or even a solution to everybody's problem, but at least give the experiment that we carried out, whether it was some zeal and not enough knowledge, or whether it was some knowledge and not enough depth and understanding, that we at least can be documented that we did this. And here are the things that we experienced on this journey. See, my understanding of 40 years in the wilderness of wandering was what not to do, but it looked like the generations went into the land of promise. And according to the record, it said they did worse than the fathers and mothers. So I'm saying you don't have to make that mistake now. The interpretation of the scriptures, they're interpreted by as many people as read them, according to their own understanding. We all know that there are double meanings to almost everything that you read, and sometimes triple meaning. But what we do know, that you judge a tree by the fruit that it bears. You can't say you're an apple tree and it's grape growing on the back. And so I'm simply saying that whatever it is that we as Israelites want to do, we're watching the people that's doing it, not the people that's watching somebody else doing it and critiquing or criticizing them, but to watch what they do to see if what they're doing works for them, not for anything or anybody else. So I'm saying to all of us who got different thoughts and different approaches to how to redeem ourselves and God's people, that we at least become the example of what it is we want to present to ourselves, our family, and ultimately the world. So I'll be more than willing on the next program we do to start off, Brother Yehoshua, with that question that you raised, and let's have some in-depth dialogue about that direction that I think I can offer and those who are joining us can offer as suggestions and direction, and that's what I want to do.
All right.
Yeah, okay. I think we've reached the end of the road today. And,
yes, sir.
You can close us out with one of them beautiful songs.
All right, no problem. Here we go. I hope you guys like it. Here we are. If it comes on. We'll be right back.
Shalom uberaka kulam modim lasinka. Toda rabba. Thank you, everybody. Next week. Peace and blessings to all.
Peace and blessings. Shalom.